Welcome to Conscious Voices, a weekly program dedicated to bringing you alternative points of view into challenging popular assumptions in order to help you be better informed and civically engaged. I'm Evan Davis, your host for this edition. Part of the show would have aired last week, but for technical difficulties resulting from a citywide internet outage for customers of BreezeLine Internet, formerly known as Wide Open West, or WOW. Since WOW was acquired by the Pennsylvania-based Breezeway, there's been an abundance of customer complaints, including service outages and inexcusably long wait times to reach customer service representatives. So last week, Columbus students learned that in-person schooling would resume after the weekend, as a resolution was reached between the Columbus School Board and the Columbus Education Association, the union representing over 4,500 Columbus teachers. Here on Conscious Voices, we've been covering the strike and the negotiation impasses that led to it, and although the teachers' union has declared the new contract a victory of sorts, it is unknown what percentage of the teachers actually voted to approve it. A vocal minority of teachers appears to feel that too many concessions were made and that the union should have held out for better terms. Chief among the union's demands were a contractual agreement or obligation on the part of the school board to fix the many inadequate or malfunctioning heating and cooling systems in public school buildings, a complaint that dates back actually decades, and which has grown more intense as late summer and early fall days have grown hotter and some classrooms have grown more crowded. In fact, reducing class size was another of the teachers' demands, as well as adding full-time music and art teachers and increasing the counseling staff. The school board, or rather their legal team, held more than 20 negotiating sessions with the union over the last 100 days, but according to the union, the progress was not very substantial. The union turned to the public on numerous occasions to complain about the substandard conditions in the school buildings, which the school board had allowed to persist, and also about the school board's recent approvals of several large corporate tax abatements, which have the result of foregoing significant amounts of revenue which would have gone to the school system. In fact, the union has been protesting those abatements for years, as have community activists and other civic organizations. A tax abatement is where the city administration grants a tax break to a company or developer or property owner for some specified period of time, usually years, in exchange for a promise by the company to build a factory in town or employ some threshold number of people at a given wage. That, in a sense, could be said that a tax abatement amounts to a public subsidy of the jobs that are created. But the math rarely works out in the taxpayers' favor. The amounts of foregone revenue typically equate to many times what the resulting workers are paid. Meanwhile, cities struggle to keep up with things like road maintenance and infrastructure improvements and various city services, as well as public education. Some liken the process to a form of corporate blackmail. The money trail often leads to campaign contributions to city officials from companies benefiting from the tax abatements, but in the case of the school board, where races are seldom competitive and campaign budgets are comparatively small, one wonders if politics doesn't play a larger role. School boards are often regarded as political stepping stones for politicians who aspire to higher offices. Our own current mayor is a prime example, having served first on the school board and then city council before becoming the city's premier spokesperson. We have audio in today's show chronicling the recent strike and earlier protests compiled from news reports and interviews and press conferences. Since our last broadcast, there's also been another police killing in Columbus. Donovan Lewis, a young African-American man, was murdered in his bed by Columbus police officers who were staging a raid on an apartment where he was staying. Police were there to arrest Lewis on a number of warrants, including one which police said had related to an incident involving a weapon. But as police approached the apartment, they encountered no resistance from the people inside, who can be seen cooperating and complying with the police commands and posing no threat, according to footage from police body cameras. Lewis hid in a bedroom and did not answer. An officer opened the door to the bedroom, whereupon body camera video footage from multiple angles shows Lewis sitting upright on the bed. That's the moment when police opened fire, fatally wounding Lewis. Lewis's family has engaged an attorney, and they held a press conference earlier this morning. This was just one of three shootings in Columbus this week.
A shocking video is causing outrage in Columbus, Ohio. It shows a 20-year-old man, his name is Donovan Lewis, being shot by police while lying in his bed. Now, the footage shows he appears to have something in his hand, which police have later suggested may have been a vape pen. A warning, you may find these images disturbing. Tino Ramos is with our Columbus affiliate, that's WBNS, has more on the story.
Donovan, if you don't come to the door, I'm going to kick it in.
After minutes of knocking, the Columbus canine unit took two men into custody. Officers and their police dog then searched the apartment for the man they came to arrest. Donovan Lewis was accused of punching and shoving his pregnant girlfriend and had multiple outstanding warrants, including a felony for improper handling of a firearm. The dog then alerted police Donovan was in a back bedroom.
That dog's gonna bite you if you don't come out.
Moments after opening the bedroom door, a flashlight shines on Lewis, who is lying on a bed. Officer Ricky Anderson, a 30-year veteran on the force, then fires a single shot, striking Lewis before holstering his gun. Officers yell at Lewis to crawl out of the room. When he doesn't, they enter the bedroom and handcuff the suspect.
Stop resisting. He's pulling away. Pat him down, make sure he's good.
All right, let's get him out to the medic.
You're all right, buddy.
You're all right. We're coming out.
Coming out.
At least three officers then carry Lewis out by his arms and legs and eventually place him on the ground of the apartment complex.
You're all right, Donovan. We got a medic coming for you. Hey.
One of the officers begins to perform CPR until an ambulance arrives and takes Lewis to the hospital, where he died less than an hour later. Columbus's police chief says Lewis appeared to be holding a vape pen and no weapon was found. The head of the Columbus Urban League calls the video disturbing and heartbreaking, but is calling for calm.
We're all in a position now where it's not about being angry, but it's about how do we stack hands and find solutions.
Now, we can tell you the police chief says the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigations will look into this incident. She also says she's committed into holding those police officers responsible if there's any wrongdoing. Now, we're expected to hear from the Lewis family today. A news conference is scheduled for later this morning. Back to you.
And we'll learn more there. Tino Ramos, thank you very much.
So I'm making plans to say goodbye to Donovan. But we are grateful that you are here today to see the very real impact Donovan's senseless death has had on his family and friends. These are the faces of just a few of the many people that have had their lives altered forever because of the events of early Tuesday morning. As you all know, on Tuesday, the Columbus Police Department released video body cam footage that shocked anyone who saw it. Thank goodness for body cam video. While we support the investigation announced Tuesday by Police Chief Bryant, there is also no question that the video tells us all, every single one of us, exactly what happened in the early morning hours of August 30th. Donovan Lewis was in the back room of his apartment when CPD stormed the apartment at 2 a.m., shortly after 2 a.m., with a warrant. Donovan was asleep before police officers arrived and had no warning that CPD would burst into his apartment. As three white police officers and an aggressive canine dog entered the apartment, Donovan was alone in his room in his bed. The dog and the officers approached Donovan's room. Officer Anderson opened the door to his bedroom as officers were yelling at Donovan to come out. Officer Anderson opened the door and almost immediately fired a shot into the bedroom as Donovan was trying to get out of bed. Donovan was unarmed and he was abiding by police commands to come out of his room when he was shot in cold blood by Officer Anderson. There was no justification, let me be clear, no justification for Officer Anderson to shoot an unarmed man trying to get out of bed as police officers were instructing him to do. These are the seconds that mark the final minutes of Donovan's life. Now, as hard as that is to watch, it is important because it tells the story. It tells us exactly what happened in the moments that led to Donovan Lewis's death. And if you think Officer Anderson had some justification for firing his weapon, then ask yourself why the police officer that had his weapon drawn with the clearest view of Donovan Lewis did not discharge his firearm. There can be no question that excessive deadly force was recklessly used by Officer Anderson when he shot and killed an unarmed black man. Donovan Lewis was 20 years old at the time of his utterly senseless death. How many more lives are going to be lost to this type of reckless activity? How many more young black lives will be lost? How many more families like Donovan's will need to appear in news conferences like this one before our leaders do enough to put a stop to these barbaric killings? And how many families like this family will need to endure attacks on the character of their loved ones who have been unnecessarily killed? As a city, as a community, as human beings, we should be outraged at the events of Tuesday morning, and every one of us should be demanding immediate reform so not even one more life, and certainly not one more young life, is taken like this. Now, before I answer questions, I would like to remind the community that the family is very appreciative of the support that they have received. Far and wide. We also understand that there will be community support out there gathering. The family would ask that this support be peaceful and supportive and constructive, and that nobody that is supporting this great family resorts to the type of violence that we saw on Tuesday evening, Tuesday morning, that ended Donovan's life. With that said, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Rex, what would you say to police in this community, and also to Chief Bryan? What's your message to police? What's your message to the chief as this moves forward?
Well, first of all, I'd like to know why in the world they are executing warrants at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, I think all of us in this room probably had parents tell us nothing good happens at 2 o'clock in the morning. The explanation by Chief Bryan that, well, we do that because we have to be sure that they're at home is nonsense. The reality is that felony warrants are executed every day in daylight hours. There was absolutely no reason for this to have been served in the middle of the night like it was. And so the first thing that I'd say to Chief Bryant is there needs to be a heck of a lot more thought before something like this occurs. And the other thing that I think is really important is it's pretty clear that some members of the Columbus Police Department, I'm careful to say not all members, but some members of the Columbus Police Department have no idea what these individuals and kids go through in these underserved communities. They are not from these communities. They don't get it. And I truly believe there has to be a better understanding from the police department before they go into these communities about who these people are, and they don't get it.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Donovan, where he went to school. We've heard that he may have played some sports, kind of some background on him.
Yeah, I mean, Donovan was a typical 20-year-old kid. He had a ton of friends, a ton of people that loved him very much. He certainly, as any 20-year-old kid, had his challenges in life, but he was overall a very good person and loved very much by the people behind me and others. One of the things that I want to focus on today, though, is I've already seen reports attacking Donovan's character, and I think it's sickening, to be honest with you. When somebody is killed in a drunk driving accident, we focus on the drunk driver, the reckless conduct of the drunk driver. We don't focus on geez, what was the victim all about? You know, was the victim a good or a bad person? There's almost an insinuation when those types of questions are asked, and certainly not by you, but the earlier reports, there's an insinuation that, gosh, maybe he deserved it, and that's just completely unfair. And a lot more details will come out about Donovan Lewis, and you'll get a chance to understand exactly who he was. Yes.
Can you kind of speak to how you're feeling about the response from the mayor as well as the police chief and kind of their press conference of the whistleblower?
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day, we're happy that there's an investigation. But like I said in my statement, the video, as far as I'm concerned, says it all. You can investigate all you want. It's never going to change the video. And I also appreciate their comments. But the reality is we've heard them before. We've heard them many times before. And lawyers and family members have had to stand up here and answer the same types of questions. What I would say to the mayor and the chief of police, that it is time to do something significantly more drastic and immediate to put a stop to this. We can't lose one more young kid by virtue of a police officer recklessly firing his gun into a room at 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the morning. We just can't do it. So more needs to be done now. Yeah, well, the family's obviously looking at accountability first, right? They want this police officer punished, certainly you know, not permitted to be out on the street again, and certainly the civil process will follow. But we're being very careful about the criminal process. That's very important to us here. Accountability is very important, but we certainly anticipate filing an action against the police officer that engaged in this reckless conduct.
As well as the city?
Yes. Yes.
And in terms of the drastic steps they have to take, Columbus has put in a civilian police review board. The Justice Department is doing a review. The mayor hired Chief Elaine Bryant, frankly, in response to a number of these shootings. So obviously they're continuing. What else should the city be doing other than the steps that have already been taken?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, it's a lot of talk and not a lot of action. And certainly, as we sit up here, yes, Chief Bryant was hired to step up activity so this doesn't happen, but here we are today. And what I'd say is whatever they're doing, it's not working, okay, because we've had three shootings in Columbus, police-involved shootings in the last 10 days. It's not working, and they need to do more. Kevin?
I believe the video or the police had said at some point that they were outside his door for 10 minutes, and they didn't get any response, leading to perhaps the conclusion that had your client complied, maybe the outcome would have been different. Can you respond to that? And you also mentioned he was sleeping. Do you have someone that can corroborate that?
Well, what I would say, Kevin, there is that Donovan was in the back room of the apartment. There's no indication that Donovan was aware of what was happening outside. The two individuals inside of the apartment, when the police got in, were handcuffed very quickly. There wasn't any indication that there was violence happening in that apartment or about to happen. I would suggest to you that there's likely one of two things that were occurring with Donovan in his room. One, he was asleep. He was known to be a deep sleeper, okay? And the second possibility, and we'll get into this in more detail as in the days that follow, is that he was afraid, okay? He was afraid about police officers in his apartment at 2:30 in the morning. And to be honest with you, with what we've seen in this country, what 20-year-old young black man wouldn't be scared behind his bedroom door? But that all begets the very fact that when that door was open, Donovan Lewis was unarmed, and he was rising out of bed in accordance with police commands when he was shot and fatally injured.
Rex, Chief Bryant has said it appears he was holding a vape pen. Obviously, no weapon was found. Was that a vape pen, and do you feel that he was shot because they interpreted it as a gun?
I don't believe that that's the case. So a vape pen was found in the room. We can't see on the video that there's any type of vape pen in his hand, but even if it was, it certainly didn't appear to be a gun. And there's something also that's very important here. You saw on the video that Officer Anderson, literally within a split second of that door being opened, fired his weapon and fatally struck Donovan Lewis. There is literally no way. We have perception and reaction time. We perceive things. It takes us a second or so to get to our brain, and then we act, okay? There is absolutely no way in the time frame between when the door was open and the gun was fired that Officer Anderson perceived a potential gun in his hand, got through to his brain, and then reacted by shooting his weapon. So it's our view that Officer Anderson just recklessly, maybe as he was trying to hold his dog back, fired his weapon, and it hit Donovan and killed him. Yes, Luann.
I want to talk a little bit about the canine, about the dog. What is your thought on having that dog there in the first place? What is your thought on what you heard as they were outside the bedroom?
Yeah, my sense of the aggressive canine and the three police officers in that apartment is that they were all there and there was no need for anybody to use deadly force there. There were three of them, there was an aggressive dog, and there was a kid asleep in bed. Completely unnecessary to have used the force that they did. Any other questions? Kevin.
In terms of rendering aid after this, can you talk about what the video shows to you and what your reaction is to that?
Well, it's the video shows a sickening reaction to me. To be honest with you, the video looks like they treated Donovan like an animal. He had been fatally struck with a bullet. Officer Anderson knew that he fired that gun. One of the most important things in first aid and trying to help somebody in a situation like that is to not move them, okay? Instead, they grabbed him. There was no gun. They handcuffed him. They told him to crawl out of bed. They dragged him onto the floor. It was just terrible, and we'll be looking very closely into whether that activity contributed to his death as well. It was completely improper.
Before you leave, I just want to offer up the opportunity for anyone who's here. If you do want to speak, we want to hear from you, but we respect your wishes. You know, any message of peace or change that you want to give to the community?
Yeah, thank you very much for that. And as I said at the outset, they have been so focused on the arrangements for Donovan. Donovan's mom, Rebecca, saw Donovan for the first time yesterday. So they've had their focus, I think, appropriately conducted in that area. And so they're not going to be speaking today, but they will speak at some point in the future. And I do want to emphasize, this family does appreciate the community support. They certainly expect to see gatherings as a result of what happened here. Reality is, if we don't gather and we don't indicate how upsetting this is to all of us, we're never going to see change. And so we understand that's going to happen, but we would like the gatherers to be peaceful and to be respectful and to, again, not resort in the type of violence that we've seen from the Columbus Police Department, unfortunately, too many times.
Rex,
thank you.
A funeral arrangement's been made. Is there a date set yet?
They're in the process of doing that right now. So thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it, and we'll be in touch.
The Columbus Education Association struck for several days, making it the first time teachers have struck in Columbus since 1975, though not the first time teachers have protested school board policies or malfeasance. Indeed, the relationship between the teachers and the board has often been less than amicable, and the school board has occasionally been mired in scandal, even prompting state and federal investigations. The school boards are funded largely through property taxes, but also through bonds and levies that must be approved by Columbus voters. Voters in Columbus and most urban areas tend to approve those levies, but the school board had planned this year to ask the voters for a whopping 13% increase. Their plan, with part of that money, was to build 5 new school buildings. But the board's record of managing and existing revenues during the tenure of the school board president, superintendent, Talisa Dixon, has been a subject of some scrutiny. Dixon has hired over 100 central office administrators whose salaries are allegedly in the 6-figure range, and she herself was granted a pay raise recently with the board's unanimous consent. She now makes over $270,000 a year, plus a $750 a month car allowance. Heck, I'd drive a $750 car. During the contract negotiations, the board was intransigent on a number of key demands and was offering only a 3% pay increase per year, as opposed to the union's ask of 8%. Nevertheless, the union did win a number of concessions that the board had resolutely refused. After an agreement was signed, which was the only time the actual board members entered the room with the teachers, a photo was taken showing some of the board members smiling alongside the teachers. But just days earlier, the board president had publicly accused the union of not bargaining in good faith. The union accused the board of failing to act in the interests of the students. And so the uneasy relationship continues for now. The school board postponed their proposed tax levy and bond, but can the board and its current members ever regain the confidence of the voters? Here's a montage of audio clips chronicling the strike, what led to it, and the resulting contract. We'll start with a local WCMH news report from a protest 4 years ago.
Members of the union that represents 4,000 Columbus City school teachers took to the streets of downtown Columbus today to protest the practice of granting large tax abatements that the union says deprives the school district of badly needed revenue. NBC4's Tyler Carter shares their story from the rally.
Columbus City school teachers say their students deserve the best, and top city officials, along with district leaders, need to work harder to make that happen.
More than 1,000 Columbus City school teachers made their voices heard loud and clear and chanted for change, rang out throughout the streets of downtown.
In order to elevate my students, they need adequate and equitable resources to achieve.
Marching to City Hall and the headquarters of Cover My Meds, presenting them with a giant tax bill.
In July of last year, both the Columbus City Council and Columbus School Board approved a massive 15-year, 100% percent tax abatement for this company worth up to $77 million.
Marissa Keith is an art teacher at Northland and Mays Elementary Schools. She said she pushes around an art cart for the last 4 years because she doesn't have a classroom.
For a lot of my students, the only reason they come to school, sometimes it's because of art, music, or dance.
The Columbus Education Association represents 4,000 plus CCS teachers, claims that tax breaks drain the district a projected $55.6 million in property tax revenue, costing the district more than 600 additional teachers and educational tools. The city's Department of Development Director Steve Shoney says property tax abatements would financially help the schools, not hurt them.
When the project opens and they're paying income tax revenue, in 1 year, the schools will get over $600,000 a year. That's nearly 20 times what the schools are getting today from that property.
The Cover My Meds building is currently generating $32,000 for Columbus City Schools on the parcel which the firm intends to build.
Once the abatement burns off, the schools will be getting $3.4 million a year.
The union will continue negotiations with the school board on April 29th. Local for you in downtown Columbus, Tyler Carter, NBC4.
Members of the union that represents 4,000 Columbus City school teachers took to the streets of downtown Columbus today to protest the practice of granting large tax abatements that the union says deprives the school district of badly needed revenue. NBC4's Tyler Carter shares their story from the rally.
Columbus City school teachers say their students deserve the best, and top city officials, along with district leaders, need to work harder to make that happen.
More than 1,000 Columbus City school teachers made their voices heard loud and clear and chanted for change, rang out throughout the streets of downtown.
In order to elevate my students, they need adequate and equitable resources to achieve.
Marching to City Hall and the headquarters of Cover My Meds, presenting them with a giant tax bill.
In July of last year, both the Columbus City Council and Columbus School Board approved a massive 15-year, 100% percent tax abatement for this company worth up to $77 million.
Marissa Keith is an art teacher at Northland and Mays Elementary Schools. She said she pushes around an art cart for the last 4 years because she doesn't have a classroom.
For a lot of my students, the only reason they come to school, Sometimes it's because of art, music, or dance.
The Columbus Education Association represents 4,000 plus CCS teachers, claims that tax breaks drain the district a projected $55.6 million in property tax revenue, costing the district more than 600 additional teachers and educational tools. The city's Department of Development Director Steve Shoney says property tax abatements would financially help the schools, not hurt them.
When the project opens and they're paying income tax revenue, in 1 year the schools will get over $600,000 a year. That's nearly 20 times what the schools are getting today from that property.
The Cover My Meds building is currently generating $32,000 for Columbus City Schools on the parcel which the firm intends to build.
Once the abatement burns off, the schools will be getting $3.4 million a year.
The union will continue negotiations with the school board on April 29th. Local for you in downtown Columbus, Tyler Carter, NBC4.
Well, months before any threat of a teacher strike, 10 investigators started digging into the conditions inside Columbus City schools. Health inspectors also routinely flagged problems that threatened student safety. As Chief Investigative Reporter Bennett Haberly uncovers, some issues took weeks to fix.
The images taken inside various schools show flooded floors, peeling paint, stairs missing safety treads. Since March, city health inspectors have flagged problems like these in more than 30 Columbus City schools.
What do you make of these?
I mean, obviously having a child that's about to go to a Columbus City school, it's concerning as a parent. You know, you want your child to be safe when they're in the building, and you assume that it will be safe.
Tina Bauer is the mother of an incoming kindergartner. Her child's school is one of 13 that will have air conditioning this fall that previously did not. The district says since 2017, it's spent $125 million in building upgrades, and this summer spent additional federal stimulus money adding the HVAC systems. But 10 investigates found, despite these investments, problems in the district's aging school buildings still persist. Our investigation began back in March, months before the labor fight between the school district and the teachers union became public.
This is what democracy looks like!
Before, teachers took to social media, posting videos like these, reportedly showing the conditions inside a CCS school. 10 Investigates' review of Columbus public health records found similar problems with leaking roofs, water damaged or missing ceiling tiles, and other issues, like this deteriorating brick wall at Devonshire Elementary. Take a look at this. An inspection report from March 28th shows a person with the school told the health department students will grab the bricks and sometimes throw them. Columbus Public Health recommended repairing the wall. But when we stopped by this week, those loose bricks were still there, months after the inspector's visit. In that same March report, health inspectors found paint in several areas of the school was peeling away. A teacher noted that the paint will flake off the ceiling and fall on students and staff. A follow-up survey found lead-based paint in 9 classrooms and other areas of the school. But 10 Investigates' review of work orders and emails between CCS and the health department show it took 7 weeks for the lead paint to be repainted and repaired. That's despite the health department's recommendation that it be completed as soon as possible. 10 Investigates also found repeated work orders for fixing lead paint and water leaks at Indianola Informal K-8, dating back to 2018 and continuing through this year. This work order from March reads, "I listed this as priority one because there's a tiny bit that came off the ceiling and there's a layer of lead paint on our ceilings. We've had to mitigate lead paint before. Please come right away to test." Now, that particular issue was taken care of in a week. We shared our findings with Dr. Nicholas Newman, an environmental pediatrician at Cincinnati Children's Hospital.
The nature of having, you know, a school with like dozens or hundreds of kids in it, and you have like lead paint hazards, that is certainly not reassuring. And you'd want to try to remedy that as fast as possible.
Columbus City Schools did provide 10 Investigates with numerous emailed responses, saying issues like this are either handled at the school level or contracted out and scheduled when students aren't there. CCS would not agree to an interview until we told them we planned to show up at this week's board meeting to ask questions.
But there are still outstanding questions about how do we allow facilities like this to get to this point? And why do we have a ballot referendum that asks people to go back to their pockets?
A district spokeswoman balked at our request to speak to board members, but said if we waited until after the meeting, we could speak with the deputy superintendent. Could the district do a better job of addressing these issues to the stakeholders?
Yeah, I think any organization can always do a better job. I've asked my team to review the process of getting these inspection reports in and then learn, you know, working with our staff and at the buildings, because there are multiple parties involved, from the building custodian to our different departments in maintenance and operations, to make sure we can turn around those issues as quickly as possible so the buildings are safe. That's what everyone wants.
David James says the district is committed to investing, but that many of its buildings are 75 years old.
Is there a sense of frustration? Because you see, I mean, it
no,
seems
that's
like
just part of the day-to-day work that we have to do here and just try to keep up with it as best as we can.
Well, what about the teachers and students and kids are in there? Don't you think they're upset that their stairs don't have treads on them, or they're
I'm sure they are, and believe me, they let us know, and we try to respond as soon as we can.
Now, a CCS spokeswoman said the images we showed you there explain why there is a need for continued investment in our school facilities. She went on to say that the board has passed a resolution voting to place a permanent improvement levy and a bond issue on the November ballot, and they'll ask for public support.
We are 5 days away from a potential strike by Columbus City school teachers, so this week is the last chance to come to a deal. Good evening, and thanks for joining us tonight at 11, everybody. I'm Yolanda Harris.
And I'm Andrew Kinsey. Today, the district and the union met for the 21st time. Then the board held its regularly scheduled board meeting. 10TV's Olivia Gino was inside the meeting and at that protest right before.
No one from the board nor the superintendent wanted to speak following the meeting, but within the meeting, they did address a massive point of contention with the Education Association.
Come on board, negotiate!
With a potential strike just days away, the Education Association signs Tuesday said they're practicing.
We don't want a strike. We're trying to do what's best for our students. No kind of alternative plan will take the place of our experience and our expertise being able to educate the students of Columbus City. So we want what's best for them, and we're trying to get that.
The Education Association, along with the district, met Tuesday with a federal mediator to negotiate. The union says the group hashed out two topics, but one that is still a problem for the union is language in the contract about HVAC systems.
If that funds are there and you're doing the work, you know, Columbus City School District, then there shouldn't be a problem with having some accountability when it comes to putting that in our contract.
The board discussed the district's work on the HVAC systems. They say out of 112 academic buildings, three buildings will not have building-wide air by the start of the school year. But a district spokesperson says they will have specialized cool-down locations. In tonight's school board meeting, board president Jennifer Adair addressed the ongoing negotiations, saying the Education Association needs to also compromise.
CEA filed a notice of intent to strike without telling the board what it would take to reach an agreement. Today, less than a week before our teachers are set to return, CEA continues to refuse to negotiate about compensation, which precludes us from getting our students back in their classrooms.
The next meeting with the federal mediator is on Thursday. If a contract is not decided on by Sunday, that's when the Education Association will vote to potentially strike on Monday. In Columbus, Olivia Eugenio, 10TV News.
Now, in other items during tonight's board meeting, the board voted to approve paying substitute teachers an additional $100 a week as an incentive to get more hired. Right now, the district has 600 substitutes available and 250 that would work daily. Also, the board voted on a resolution to remove its planned levy from the November ballot. The board voted to put it on the ballot back in May, which would have built five schools across the district. They say they hope to put it back on the ballot as soon as possible.
I am here to announce, for the first time since 1975, Columbus teachers are on strike at effective 12:01 a.m., It is with a full understanding of the sacrifices that students, parents, and teachers will make together to win the schools Columbus students deserve that CEA members overwhelmingly rejected the board's last, best, and final offer tonight and voted to strike. In multiple efforts to negotiate through the media after walking away from the bargaining table, the school board has tried desperately to make this strike about teacher salary, teacher professional development, and teacher leaves. Let me be clear. This strike is about our students who deserve a commitment to modern schools and heating and air conditioning, smaller class sizes, and a well-rounded curriculum that includes arts, music, and PE. As a union of more than 4,000 professional educators, we are entrusted to advocate for our students, and that is why we are demanding that every student in every neighborhood in Columbus feels safe and supported at school and can be educated in a way that prepares them to be active and informed members of our community. Rest assured, our decision to strike was not taken lightly, but the outpouring of love and support CEA members have received from parents and our community assures us that we are doing what is right for our students. Picketing will begin at 7 a.m. tomorrow.
Where will you be picketing?
The picket locations will be sent out in a media press release. 94%. I don't have the particular number, but 94% of the members that were present tonight. There is no number on how long we will strike. That's going to be determined by whether or not the district comes back to the table, which they can do. That is going to be up to the district to come back to the table and finish this negotiation process.
Was that 94% on the vote to reject the offer or the vote to strike?
It was 94% for both the vote to strike and 94% of our voters rejected the offer.
So both of them?
Yes. That is up for the Columbus City School District to figure that out.
What about free lunches for the students in that feeding option 40?
That is up for the Columbus City School District to figure that out.
What is your message to the community that now is looking at the start of the year and their first day of school is up in the air?
Thank you for your support. We will continue to fight for the schools Columbus students deserve. No matter what it takes, continue to back us. We are here for our students. The district has not scheduled any meetings for this week as of yet.
Throughout this process, you know, you've all been saying you hope this doesn't have to get to a strike. What is the feeling right now that this is going to a strike?
We are motivated to get the schools that Columbus students deserve. We understand that this is a difficult decision, but we are doing what is best for our students in order to get the schools they deserve. We made movements in the proposals. We are proud of the movements that we made in the proposals that we received tonight. However, the negotiation process is not over.
What was the line drawn? What on that option was no for them?
Again, we want the art and PE in all of our elementary schools. We want contract language that actually speaks to accountability of the school district to fix the problems that are in their school. We want the district to stop skirting this issue and actually fix the promise or the problems in the school that they have promised all these years. We are always open to more negotiations. The district just needs to do their part.
I know at this point you guys are talking about striking Monday and Tuesday. What about Wednesday?
There is no time limit on the strike. If we can get back to the table tomorrow morning and work this out, we'll end the strike Monday morning. But we are dependent on the district to come back to the table and to finish this negotiation process.
What about those who say that the district?
Have having the equipment in the building does not constitute having it functioning for our students ready to enter school. We want all of our schools and a promise to all of our schools that they will have functioning HVAC, fix the problems that currently exist, and we want language and timelines that speak to that structure.
What about, I know the district says if you guys are on strike, they're going to have substitute teachers. I mean, what would you say to those subs who may be teaching the kids on Wednesday?
There is no substitute for the expertise that Columbus City School teachers have to offer. You cannot put a sub in a classroom and hand them this curriculum and expect them to do the job that we are trained to do. We are highly educated. We are prepared to do our job. We will be prepared to do our job the first day we walk into the classroom. Whatever that day is, we will be ready. No sub is prepared for that, and our parents don't want that.
What do you tell parents and students right now after this decision?
We tell them that we're doing this for them, and we want to show them that we're putting our hope that these problems are going to be fixed. It's been far too long. Columbus City Schools needs to step up and get this fixed.
What about, obviously, you know, you guys say it's about the kids, the school district says it's about the kids, but those folks who say that, obviously it's not, because the kids are in the middle of this, they're the ones who are going to suffer.
I suggest that they not look at, or we are not willing to just settle for the status quo. If we were to just take this offer and go in, that allows the district to just continue business as usual. We're not willing to accept that. We want these changes. We've been asking for these changes for years. The district has made promises, but they don't want to be held accountable, so that allows them to just keep holding on and pushing back and pushing back. Our students are the ones we see every single day. We're the teachers in the classroom. We know and we see it. They don't. They need to listen to us, and they need to do what's right by our students and our parents.
How far are you guys willing to go as far as the timeline?
We'll have to see.
Earlier you told me there is a scenario you can go on strike and still not affect the first day of school. How do you see that playing out over the next couple days?
If we can get back to the table and negotiate, then, you know, and get this resolved by time that students are ready to come back to school, then it's all fair and good, right?
Have you all heard anything from the board at this point?
Nope. I hope they know that we love them. I hope that they know that what we're doing, why we are here right now, why we are doing what we are doing is because we love our students. We want what's best for our students. It has always been about them. It has always been about the conditions in Columbus City Schools not being up to par while our district officials sit in prime locations and not have to worry about any of the other things that we have to deal with day to day. Take care of our kids. Put your words to action. If you care about these kids, show us. Go back to the table and negotiate this until it is a done deal. Psychologists, and other education professionals in Columbus walked the picket line earlier this week in order to fight for the improved learning conditions like climate-controlled buildings, access to art, music, and PE for elementary students and smaller class sizes. Countless parents, community members, faith leaders, students of all ages, and our union brothers and sisters from around the state and country joined us on that line. This contract shows that when we fight together, we win together. It's fighting that we're here at, or it's fitting, that we're here at Huntington Park because this contract is a home run for our students. Highlights of the new agreement include a contractual guarantee that all student learning areas will be climate controlled no later than the start of the 2025-2026 school year, including installation of heating, ventilation, and air conditioning in buildings currently without HVAC and in buildings that currently only have partial HVAC. Reductions in class size caps in all grade bands, lowering the number of students in every classroom by 2 over the course of the contract. The first ever limitations on the numbers of buildings assigned to each elementary art, music, and PE teachers, with scheduling intended for 1 specialist per subject area per building. The first ever contractual limitation on the number of CEA positions that can be outsourced to out-of-town corporations, thereby ensuring that our students are educated by experienced professionals from our local community, and a groundbreaking paid parental leave program for teachers, as well as a salary increase for each of the next 3 years that will help attract and retain the high quality educators that our students deserve. It is important to remember that just 10 short days ago, our last bargaining session before the strike, CEA was told no on guaranteed air conditioning and heating in every building, no on class size reductions in middle, high school, and no on improved access to art, music, and PE at the elementary level. More than 4,000 of our members stood strong on the picket line. Our community joined the fight, and we won victories in all of 3 of these issues that will impact every one of our nearly 50,000 students in Columbus City Schools. With tonight's vote, classes for Columbus City students will resume tomorrow. We are excited to get back to where we belong, our classrooms, doing what we do best, educating our students and shaping the future of this great city.
What would you say to the parents and students who joined through the picket line this past week?
Thank you. The only thing I can think of is to say thank you for joining us, for supporting us, and we hope that what we did here today is going to just be the beginning of moving forward, of changing this city and changing things for our students for the better.
There was still a good amount of people who did reject it. Will that cause a rift between all of you teachers at all?
I can't predict what teachers who rejected it were feeling and how they're going to feel in the future. We got our members to a level of emotion and creation with this movement, and I think that some people are just maybe not ready to give up that fight, but I want them to understand that they're not giving up their fight just by accepting this agreement. What they are actually doing is starting the first step. We're not stopping here. We're continuing to move forward. We will continue to work together as a unit, and we will continue to listen to the voice of our students, which is what we started this fight for in the first place. Yeah. This was about our students. This was about us moving forward to make things better for them. And we understand teacher salary is an important issue, and that teachers are underpaid across this country. However, we started with a mission to serve our students. We are ending today with a mission to serve our students.
And how would you describe how you're feeling right now?
Tired. I feel really strong. I love that we stood together. I think our members love that we stood together. Our bargaining team kicked butt. You know, they really put in the hours to put this together. They fought hard. Over 150 hours or 100 hours? I don't know. 100 hours? I don't know. They fought hard. And I just respect that because our bargaining team was teachers. Our bargaining team gave up their own lives. And a lot of them have things going on with them, you know, that the public doesn't know about. But they did it because we want these schools to be great for our students.
How relieved are you that Monday is going to be tomorrow?
And I imagine that, you know, when my colleagues get in there to see their kids, that's going to make all the difference because they are waiting to see us. They saw what we did, and they still have hope and still have appreciation that their teacher stood up for them, and now they're going back into the classroom with them one-on-one.
And going back to this is just the beginning, I know it's kind of jumping the gun, you just got this one filled, but does it feel like you guys kind of have a better stance going forward now that you have stood your ground and showed you mean business?
Yes. And I do feel like this is a unifying thing. Yes, people are, you know, going to have their, you know, opinions about it one way or the other. That's always going to happen. But in the long run, we are stronger. We are more united than we've ever been. And this honestly was the best three-day PD that we've ever had opening.
You said that they were having, like, 3 points that you did not win, is what you said in the... You guys also mentioned a few times that the nation's eyes were watching. It wasn't just Central Ohio. This has been a national news story. How does it feel to be an example for other teachers' unions across the country?
I don't think it was just teachers personally. I feel like this is workers across America, you know, laborers across America, and just individuals who are tired of just settling for the status quo, you know. Hopefully, our voice and what we were able to accomplish here today will continue to inspire people to continue to fight. And hopefully, it will continue us, you know, inspire us to keep going. Because, you know, the greater good here is that the nation needs to put more focus on public education. Yeah. We need to fix this systematically. This is not just Columbus, Ohio. They need to put more of an investment in our students because they are the most important investment in this entire nation. It starts here, but we want to keep it going. And hopefully the community will see what power they have and actually get involved even more. Put the people in office that you know are going to be for education and actually do right and not just using it as a stepping stone. Let's get this system fixed so that our people, our students, can actually reap the most benefit. Yes.
We'll follow both of these stories in the coming months here on Conscious Voices, which can be heard each week at this time in your community radio stations, WCRSLP 92.7 and 98.3 FM, and WGRNLP 94.1 FM in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis, and I'll be with you again next week for another edition. Take care. The program you are listening to is broadcast both on community radio station WCRS via translator W245AY at 98.3 FM and on WGRN 94.1 FM, WCRSFM.org and WGRN.org. If you like what you're hearing or want to get involved, please visit those websites and give what you can. Both stations are non-commercial and volunteer-run. Both stations depend on listener support. Again, the websites are WCRSFM.org for WCRS and WGRN.org for WGRN.